Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hey, Mama, you don't have time to be messing around endlessly scrolling to find a caregiver for your child. Let me clue you in to my trick to save time and my sanity when finding a sitter. SitterCity.com. SitterCity knows what they're doing. They've been helping busy parents find the perfect sitter for over 20 years. While other sites overwhelm you by throwing hundreds of random profiles your way, SitterCity matches you with caregivers who actually fit your needs. No endless scrolling, no guesswork. I love that all caregivers undergo ID verification. They have background checks, specialized qualifications, and real parent reviews to know if they showed up on time or really know how to handle my sassy toddler. And if I need help, I can talk to a real live human, not a robot, with SitterCity's delightful team. You know, my employer pays for me to get SitterCity completely free as part of my benefits. Yours could too. SitterCity is my go-to for a smarter, simpler way to find reliable, trustworthy care. Don't wait. Go to SitterCity.com/XX and get the help you need.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast is adapted from my YouTube channel, and this episode is part of my Vault series, where I'm turning my back catalogue into podcasts. So, if I ever reference photos or things on screen, please remember that these episodes were originally made for video. Also, if research or references seem out of date, please bear in mind as well that some of these episodes were recorded as far back as 2016. I just want to make sure that all of my content is available on podcast as well for you to enjoy. If you wish to find me on YouTube, I am just Georgia Marie over there, and with all my disclaimers out of the way, enjoy the episode. Hey guys, and welcome back to my channel for another Midweek Mystery, where today I'm going to be covering the case of Lee Boxall, who disappeared from Sutton, England on the 10th of September 1988. I was contacted by an extended family member of Lee's to talk about his disappearance, in an attempt to bring more public awareness and hopefully on the back of that, some new leads. Despite some interesting twists and turns in the case over the years, Lee has sadly not been seen in over 32 years. Lee Boxall was born on the 16th of February 1973 in Surrey, England, making him 15 years old when he disappeared on the 10th September 1988 from Sutton High Street, a borough in London. He lived with his parents, Peter and Christine, in Cheam in Greater London, and he was their oldest child with a younger sister as well. The family moved to Hanover in Germany for a bit at one point, but returned back to Cheam in 1984. He got on well with his parents and did okay at school. He was described as an average student, but he was well behaved and never really got into trouble. Lee apparently had some really good friends and had a crush on a local girl and would take his neighbour's dog out for walks as an excuse to meet her. He loved music and would always call radio stations to enter their competitions. His dad says that Lee was quiet, well-behaved, considerate and sensitive, but he was too trusting and not a streetwise kid. On Saturday the 10th September, he left his home just before 11 a.m. to go and meet his friend Russell in nearby Sutton. Lee and Russell spent a couple of hours wandering around the high street just doing some window shopping and said goodbye around 1 p.m. Russell later said that Lee mentioned something about going to a football stadium to watch a game.
From what I can gather, he didn't specify which stadium and which game, but it makes sense that he would have been aiming to watch the Charlton versus Millwall at Selhurst Park Football Stadium. Lee supported Sutton United himself, but they were actually playing away in Lancashire on that particular day. And whilst Lee was known to go away to away games on the supporters' bus pretty often, he likely wouldn't have travelled that far to Lancashire on his own at the last minute without letting anyone know. Lancashire is about a 4-hour and 15-minute drive from Sutton, so we're talking a pretty serious journey there. Plus, I can assume he probably would have been pretty excited if he had plans to go see Sutton United and would have mentioned this to his friends and his parents and pretty much anyone else. So it makes sense he would have just been going to a local game for other teams. On the day he disappeared, Lee was wearing black jeans, brown suede shoes, his Swatch watch and a white t-shirt with the Flintstones printed on front. He was about 5'6" and a relatively slim build with light brown hair. It was about 5 p.m. that night when his parents started to realise that something might be wrong. Lee hadn't come home. The football match would have ended by this time, and Lee was always a good kid. If he wasn't going to come straight home after a match, he would always find a payphone to call home and let his parents know what he was doing so they didn't worry. Lee's dad Peter told Vice just last year, "Lee's mum called me in the evening and panicked when I told her that Lee hadn't come home. She got a cab back to our house because she'd been at her mum's house. We contacted Lee's friends, neighbours and relatives. We called local hospitals in case Lee had been admitted after an accident. No one knew where Lee was. I knew that Anthony, one of Lee's close friends, had gone to the coast with his parents. They lived nearby, so I awaited their return home thinking Lee might have gone with them. Anthony arrived late that night, but without Lee. I then contacted the police. They said Lee would probably turn up." But of course, Lee never did turn up, and after a couple of days, the police came to the conclusion that Lee wasn't the type to run away from home. It was entirely out of character for him. According to Peter, the police apparently thought that he might have tried to go to the football match, somebody might have offered him a lift, and he came to harm that way. That was in the very, very early days of the investigation. Investigators scoured through hours and hours of CCTV footage from the stadium that day, looking for Lee's face in the crowds, and they appealed for witnesses who may have seen him at the match to come forward. But eventually they had to come to the conclusion that he never made it to the match. Whatever happened to him happened on his journey there, if that was indeed where he was headed that Saturday afternoon. Another thing that suggests that Lee never made it to the match is a supposed sighting of him at 2:30 p.m. outside a Tesco, that's now an Asda, on Sutton High Street. If this sighting is correct, and from what I can gather, I think investigators think it is, then there's no way that Lee would have made it to the stadium in time for the 3 o'clock kickoff. The train journey alone was half an hour, and he was 15 minutes from the train station at Tesco, and it was still a walk from the station to the stadium at the other end. It seems that if Lee did intend to go to the match, then he's changed his mind. This Tesco sighting really threw a spanner in the works in the early investigation, as the police have been working under the assumption that Lee had gone to the football match. That's where they were appealing for information. They were telling people who had been at the match to come forward with information. Therefore, anyone who may have spotted him elsewhere in this time may have disregarded their sightings, or probably didn't pay much attention to the appeals as they weren't relevant to them. If they weren't at a football match between these particular hours, then why do they need to come forward with any information? For the next 3 months, there was very little advancement in this case, despite Lee's parents distributing missing posters, photos of their son, as far as they could. Christine wrote letter after letter to all of the local newspapers trying to get them to share his story, but they had very little luck. Eventually, Lee's case was featured on the BBC's Crime Watch, but little came of this. There were TV appeals done by celebrities John Fashnell and Carol Decker. His photo was even included in the video for Runaway Train by Soul Asylum, which was an anthem made for missing children. In relation to last week's video on the milk carton kids, Lee's face was also put on the side of milk cartons as part of the campaign run by the National Missing Persons Helpline. Lee was even one of 10 missing children whose photos were featured on the side of 40-foot Ford lorries, alongside a phone number for the National Missing Persons Hotline. Despite all of this, there were no significant leads in this case for a long time, apart from one person stating that Lee may have been spotted at Sutton train station in the company of a man, and another contradicting theory that he was seen at that same time walking towards his house. The police decided to focus in on the train station lead more, but they never found any more information on this. A year or so after the disappearance, Peter was contacted by a stranger who said that they'd seen Lee working in a market in Perivale in West London. Of course, Peter rushed to this market to see if it was true, but despite him saying that the boy was indeed the spitting image of his son, it wasn't him. And then in 1990, there was a potential lead in the form of a London banker who boasted about knowing where Lee's body was buried. He said it was at St Dunstan's Church, and a co-worker of this same man also provided a statement claiming he told her the very same thing. As far as I could tell, this man was brought in for questioning, but it never led anywhere. And after that, the case went cold for another 23 years, until it was reopened by the Metropolitan Police in 2013, with the police officially saying that although it was still a missing persons investigation, there was little evidence that Lee was still alive. A very interesting new line of investigation had opened that police hoped would lead to some answers, in the form of a place where Lee was known to hang out, occasionally known as The Shed. The Shed was an annex attached to the St Dunstan Church and was the home of a fairly popular youth club in the area. Some describe it as more of a hut, but it seems it was burned down or destroyed quite a long time ago. It doesn't still stand. The founder of this youth club at the Shed was the church's groundkeeper called William Lambert, and in 2011 William Lambert was put on trial for sexually abusing four young girls on the church premises 20 years previously. He was found guilty of one count of rape, two counts of indecent assault, and two counts of procuring girls to have sexual intercourse by false pretenses and representations. It then came to light that he'd been found not guilty back in 1994 to the charge of raping girls at this very same youth club, and he'd been found guilty of gross indecency against a child in 1968. William Lambert is an awful man, and apparently he believed himself to be a warlock who could pass his powers onto children he abused through sex. He claimed to one girl he raped on a gravestone that she would get power from a black floating monk who apparently haunted the child. When another girl told him she was pregnant, he coerced her into having sex with him, claiming that he could make her not pregnant. All of the victims were between 11 and 15 years old, and he was jailed in May 2011 at age 75 for just 11 years, which if you ask me, is not long enough. But how does this all relate to Lee's disappearance? Well, in 2013, when Lee should have been 40 years old, there was a tip in relation with Lambert's case, which led them to believe that Lee might have come to harm at the Shed. It was reported that he occasionally attended this club to meet up with friends, as it was only a mile away from his home. The Shed was a place a lot of teenagers hung out, as they could drink and smoke freely there. A new theory popped up that Lee had decided to go to the Shed that afternoon instead of to the football match, that he'd witnessed abuse and tried to stop it, resulting in him getting killed. Peter has said to Vice, "I do think that if Lee had gone to the Shed and seen another child being assaulted, it would have been in his character to come to the victim's aid." On the basis of this new information, the police had enough evidence to excavate the entire graveyard, believing Lee's body may have been buried there. This was Scotland Yard's biggest ever archaeological dig. It cost £1 million and lasted for a whole year. They used ground-penetrating radars and all of the latest technology. But of course, they weren't allowed to dig up actual graves, only the ground around the graves. Although I must say, surely it would make sense for somebody to bury a body in a graveyard in an already dug grave. That makes the most sense to me. So despite this extensive search, they found nothing, but Lee's body could still have been there in one of the actual graves. The Metropolitan Police have said about this lead that detectives believe that Lee witnessed someone, probably a teenager, being sexually assaulted. It's believed that he either intervened to stop the assault or threatened to report it. Detectives also believe that he was subjected to assault in order to stop him from identifying and exposing the subject, and that this assault proved fatal. They've asked for anyone who may have been abused by Lambert over the years to come forward and help with the investigation, and they've appealed to the victim of the sexual assault that Lee may have been witness to come forward and share what they know. This victim may have stayed quiet for many, many years, scared they would be implicated in the murder if they came forward. It seems that the police are pretty convinced about this theory of theirs. There was a renewed Crime Watch appeal aired in 2013 that this entire theory actually came on the back of. Detective Inspector John McQuaid said to the BBC, "One or two calls were very focused on things that we are already working on and are very positive for our line of inquiry. From our point of view, it's proved very promising. We've even had a victim of an offence going back to that time who had never reported it before." In 2014, three men aged 78, 52 and 41 were arrested and questioned on suspicion of murder and conspiracy to pervert justice and indecency with children. A 42-year-old woman was also arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to pervert justice and indecency with children, but all four of them were released without charge. The same year, police announced a £20,000 reward for information leading to a breakthrough in this case on what would have been Lee's 41st birthday. In 2018, it was confirmed by Scotland Yard that detectives had interviewed a potential witness and new information was being investigated, although little information is known about this new inquiry. And on the 30th anniversary of the disappearance, a fresh appeal was launched through the charity Missing People. And then just last year, Lee was the focus of an episode of Channel 5's Missing or Murdered. In this episode, an anonymous witness nicknamed Sally talks about the shed and the culture around it. She says that the moment he began going to the youth club, the older men who ran it would ask creepy and inappropriate questions. One man apparently would tell the girls if they slept with him, they would get magically neater handwriting. Boys weren't really welcomed into the club with open arms, it was mostly for girls. Another man who also attended the club as a child said that there was a mattress in the back room, which was backed by Sally's own statement. Apparently the mattress was bloodstained, it was gross. Sally also said that on one occasion she was invited into a private place, probably into the back room with the mattress, and was blatantly told by whoever invited her that Lee was never going to be seen again, that he was dead and buried in grassland not far from the shed. And as of now, December 2020, it seems like that's as far as the investigation into Lee's disappearance goes. It seems that the police are pretty convinced it has something to do with the shed and the paedophilia that went on there, despite saying they don't think Lee was a victim of the sexual abuse himself, but they are unable to untangle this web. They do think there are people out there, more abuse victims, who may know something but are too scared to come forward. I can't help but feel there's something the police are holding back here, like another reason why they're so convinced that he was a victim of whatever happened at the shed. Lee's parents are incredible, 32 years on, and they refuse to give up on the search for their son. Of course, they've made peace with the fact that Lee is probably not alive anymore, but they hold out hope. They still live in the same home they did when Lee went missing. They've kept his room exactly as it was on the day he disappeared, and they make extra food each Christmas in case he walks through the door. Peter even went on Britain's Got Talent in 2017 as part of the Missing People Choir, made up of friends and relatives of missing people. They share the images and names of their loved ones whilst performing in the hope to raise more awareness. Investigators completely believe that there's someone out there who knows something about what happened to Lee, and they're determined to get that person to come forward. If you know anything or know of anyone who may know anything, then please contact the Metropolitan Police with information. Lee's parents just want some closure. They don't want to die not knowing what happened to their son.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.